This week's conversation with Raina Krobak Yee is sponsored by Sassy Jack Stitchery and the Embroiderers Guild of America. Kim and the folks at Sassy Jack's are getting ready to open their new Forever Home this fall, and it promises to be a destination store for needleworkers from all corners. Be sure to check out the full collection of Sassafras Samplers charts, including Alice Ellen Usher 1873, Christian Henry 1816, and Elizabeth Cooper, Jesus Wept. Many of the Sassafras charts are available as PDF downloads, and Kim will be happy to put together kits for all of them. Also, there are three free charts on the Sassy Jack's homepage: Ukraine Stitches, Rosa Parks, and the Red February Sampler. Make Sassy Jack Stitchery your local needlework store by visiting the website at sassyjackstitchery.com and plan to visit the new shop when it opens this fall. The show is also sponsored by the Embroiderers Guild of America at egausa.org. If you're interested in advancing your needlework skills and education, consider becoming a certified professional through one of EGA's programs: teacher, needlework judge, and needlework appraiser. You'll also want to take advantage of the many free projects EGA offers. For the upcoming holidays, there's a Halloween Blackwork Biscornu, Halloween Plaid Spider, Cruel Wreath Ornament, and a Reindeer Ornament. And that's just a small snippet of the vast number of needlework experiences the EGA offers. Consider becoming a member today at egausa.org so you can benefit from a whole new world of needle arts. Thanks to Sassy Jacks and the EGA for sponsoring the show. And now, on to our conversation with Raina Krobak Yee. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week from Tangleware, Raina Krobak Yee. Raina, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We have things to learn from you.
Yes.
Many things. Okay, Raina's main deal is these heat map designs, but it's not just your standard heat map. She does a lot with them, so we're going to learn about that. But, you know, got to get the background in. So where did you learn about stitching? Is that something you picked up in college or as a kid? Or?
So that's actually an interesting question. I grew up in a family that does a ton of crafts. My grandmother did a ton of stuff. My mother is a fantastic artist who's done pretty much everything in like all of the craft and art space. And so I grew up learning just in general, like do this craft and this craft and that craft, but nothing really stuck. And then right after college, I went to teach English in France for a year, and I couldn't watch TV in French and do crossword puzzles in English. And I used to always do crossword puzzles while I watched TV. And so I started cross stitching. I found a little needlepoint shop and I found a kit and I started cross stitching. And that kind of got me on the road of doing patterns. And that was where I really started the cross stitching. And that was just it. Like I'm very cross stitch monogamous with my crafts.
Okay. I want to explore the mental exercise of watching French TV and doing English crossword.
Yeah, that just, I mean, I'd need total silence to do crossword puzzles. So, you know, to be watching TV and doing it at the same time is just mind blowing to me, but.
Yeah. It definitely, I think I do better with the cross stitching now because I can focus on the pattern, but still follow the television.
Okay.
All right.
When you went to France, did you speak French or did you have to learn that on the fly?
I did actually. It was one of my majors.
Oh, okay.
In college. And so I had done some study abroad. And so I spoke it. I had to navigate a little bit of learning, but pretty much I was fine.
Oh, so you spoke it well enough for the French to accept you then?
Yes. Yes.
Because that would be my fear. That would be my fear, is I would show up with all my French, armed with French, and they'd go, "What are you saying?"
Yeah. As long as you try, they're generally pretty welcoming.
Oh, okay, all right. So what does cross stitch like in France, or what was it? Was it pretty much what we get here, or a different kind of flavor and design?
To be honest, I didn't get extensively into it over there. Okay. There was a little needlepoint shop near the school I was working in, and I just found a little kit. I think it was a sampler, in fact.
Oh.
And worked on that. And then when I came home for Christmas break, I found a couple of patterns and I brought those back. and then I found Teresa Wensler. And so I did those for a while.
Okay.
So those, I have a few of those I've done, including a dragon, which is one of my favorite pieces, because it's got beadwork and glittery thread. And that one was fabulous. And then I also found Cross Stitch Collectibles, which does famous paintings. So I've stitched gifts for other people of Monet and Botticelli and Mucha and a whole bunch of different artists.
So you basically like full coverage.
Yes. Pieces. Yeah. I have done some that aren't full coverage, but I, to be honest, I'm not a big fan of partial stitches.
Okay.
and so I, or French knots aren't really my thing. And so I definitely prefer full coverage pieces.
French knots have been the topic this week. We've been doing several interviews and
oh, really?
Yeah. They're not winning any popularity contest.
No.
My mother apparently loves French knots. So she got the French knot love in the family, and I'll let her do those.
what needlework did your mom do?
Oh, I think she's done everything. She sews clothes. She weaves. She upcycles clothes into other types of clothes. She's done quilting. Basically, if you name something, she's probably done it.
Oh, so you grew up in the full metal craft and art environment then, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, and my aunt and my grandmother, everybody did crafts.
Yeah, that's neat. Cause, you know, what's neat is that something stuck. And
right.
Because, you know, because as a kid, I mean, it's not unusual to rebel and say, I don't want to do any of that. I'm going to go play baseball. And
Right. For sure. Well, my four-year-old has even tried her hand at cross-stitching. She's still kind of learning the principle. She likes making really big, long stitches. She doesn't like going up one hole and down the next hole. Yeah. But it looks kind of cool. It's like abstract art.
Yeah. She's 4 years old, too. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's about when I taught. I think my daughter wanted to learn it then, and she did not, very rebellious, did not up at one, down at two. I thought, why am I forcing this? I just gave her a piece of cloth and said, go play.
Yep.
And she loved it. She loved it. She's just working on her own.
So do you still do full coverage stuff as a regular thing?
Yes. I spent a couple of years working mostly exclusively on heat maps. I just finished a snarky embroidery for my mother for Mother's Day. It took me a little longer than I expected. And that wasn't full coverage. But I'm going back to I'm going to start stitching a new heat map pattern soon that is, it's full stitches, but not full coverage.
So could you explain what a heat map, you know, for those who are listening are like, okay, what does she mean by heat map?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So it might help if I give a little bit of the history of like how I like hit on this idea. Is that when I was pregnant with my first daughter, one of my friends who does some knitting and so on, she mentioned to me the idea of a temperature blanket. And knitting's never really spoken to me. And I was like, I wonder if I could create this heat map to mark my pregnancy. And so I'm a data analyst by profession. And I was like, I can do this. I can do this in Excel, but I can make this work. And so basically what I did is I took the high temperature and the low temperature for every day. And I just tracked that. And then, like literally with the weather app on my phone. And then I built it into this rectangle. The first one I ever did is I'm looking at it right now. It's a rectangle where the bottom of it goes from the low temperature and then it goes up through all the different color variations to the high temperature. So like imagine a sunset. It looks kind of like a sunset. If you have like the darkest part of the sunset, which would be the low temperature, and the highest part of the sunset, which would be the high temperature, those two colors by themselves don't tell you a lot. But if you put all of them in between, that's what creates the sunset.
Right. Okay.
Right. Yeah. And so that's kind of what this is. And it looks a little bit like a sunset and a little bit like if you put like a, X-ray, not X-ray. What's the thing you use at night to look at, heat?
Not infrared. Yeah, that.
That thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I should know that. My husband studied, light in physics in school. So I should know all that.
This will come to me right after we get done. Come on. This is,
yeah.
UV, I know.
UV maybe, but infrared.
There we go.
That's what it is.
So you say, all right, during my pregnancy, I'm going to remember the temperatures as a way of remembering, taking me through the pregnancy visually. Are we doing a daily thing? I mean, you got 9 months of 30 days each, so that's a lot of days. What?
Right.
How did you work that all out?
Yeah. So it actually, my specific one ended up being 8 months, but
See, I knew I should have never said the number of months.
You know, it varies by person. Well, there's the year long one. So some of them are 12 months. Not for pregnancies, but for heat maps. So
that'd
basically
be a long pregnancy.
That would be a lot. Yeah, no, thank you. 8 months was enough. So basically what I did is I took each day of the pregnancy and took those high and low temperatures of the weather. And I put each into a column. So like, if you look at the heat map, the first day that I tracked is at the very left and the last day, the birthday, is the very right side of the heat map.
So what time of year was this?
Let's see. She was born in early January. And so I think I started tracking mid-May. And so there's a lot of red.
Ugly, ugly, hot days pregnant. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of that. And then it went from hot to like, it went from orange to blue in like no time flat. So it went, there was like no fall.
Oh, okay, of course. No, because that's, you know, to me, that's all right. So how do you look at that and remember? And immediately, I mean, I think of my wife going through our two children, and I remember those hot summer days. And you know, she's just uncomfortable. I mean, just all the time, mm-hmm. It's hot. And
right.
Yeah, so you
right.
can look back and go, oh, yeah, those days, yuck.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then on my specific one, the very right-hand side when she was born is bright purple because she was born, like, on a day with a blizzard outside.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cause see, that's the, you know, that's the thing is when you heat maps, okay, you track the temperatures, good for you, but really it's it gives you the picture of those 8 months and that blizzard at the end. Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. And it's really interesting too, how different, cause I also, for my second pregnancy, I tracked as well. And that one was 8.5 months, but it looks very, very different. The weather was much more steady. There's a lot of light blue with a couple of shoots of like yellow. And it's just, it's, you know, there's some red at the end because she was born in June, but like, it's a very different heat map. Like they're all just so unique.
Cause you plot them for wherever the person is, right?
I do. Yeah, so I plotted mine for Boston, but I, if somebody, like I've had people order them from the United Kingdom or from Hawaii or from Florida, and like I'll use data from that location, that time period, and so they all look, there are some similarities because I'm using the temperature, normal temperature range for where they are. So for instance, like if I'm doing one that's in Texas, the normal range might go up to 110 degrees, whereas in Boston, it might go up to 100 degrees. So the colors are going to map a little bit differently to the temperatures. But the, you know, overall, no matter how they map, they all look different because no, even just between weather stations that are near to each other, they have different weather.
Okay, wait, we'll back up the truck here. All right, dumb guy question. All right, this is the dumb guy coming in here now. So I thought I had to track the temperatures. So if I say to you, I want a heat map, you provide me with?
It depends.
Okay.
It depends. If you are looking for, let's say you were looking for a heat map of the year your child was born, then as long as that's in a place that has a weather station that's recording data, I can pull that through my automated, I use a computer script that I've written in Python, and I can create that automatically and create a PDF pattern. But if, say, you wanted like a 2022 heat map, I have probably 15 or 20 people right now who are stitching current year heat maps as we go. And so I would say the majority of them will manually enter their data so they can have their pattern like up to the day. And as soon as they enter the data, like it'll filter through the pattern. But then some other people, you know, maybe they just know, they know that they don't really want to have to enter the data every day. They can have me update that quarterly. And so I update it and I send them a PDF quarterly once the data is in there for that period of time.
Oh, so there's so much, there's more to this than I thought there was. So this is a whole thing. Oh, you know, lights are going on here. I'll be all right. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And see, and that's always for me has been the problem with those doing a temperature one. It's like, I always think, okay, hard to find the temperature and you know, you pick your colors and you go. But I found I never liked to do that. I didn't like temperature, write it down, find the color that I didn't like doing it because I've tried it a couple now. And yet the idea of having a memory of the temperature for a year is very appealing to me. And I love the way your heat maps look because they don't look, to me, they're not like, looks more scientific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got a science major and to me that I like how that looks.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I went into this thinking is that, you know, I tend to like sort of a lot of like some of the more modern patterns, but also things that are different than what you often see. Like you often see samplers, which I've seen a lot of samplers that are gorgeous. But it's not really my thing as much. And so the thing I liked about this was that it did look kind of science and data. I am a data analyst. That's like one of the things that I love doing. And so it's kind of the perfect marriage between like, I make my living as a data analyst, and this is kind of like data analysis, but it's using my data analysis skills to support my cross-stitch habit.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. So, oh, this is cool. Now, see, this is taking on a whole different dimension for me. So I could then basically, I could say, I want to give as a gift, you know, for my daughter, for instance, a heat map of her, of, you know, the 9 months she was in the womb. So I could write to you and say, hey, I, you know, these are the dates, chart this out for me, and then you could pull that data.
Right, exactly.
Cool.
Alternatively, like I've also done the year of the birth. So I did one that was the flower heat map that I have a picture of in my Etsy shop. That is the year of my younger daughter's birth rather than just my pregnancy.
Right. Yeah, because now the ideas are coming to me in a hurry here. Right. All kinds of things.
I think that what I like about these is it gives you like something for a big birthday. Like I've got a big birthday coming up and I'm thinking it would be fun to have a temperature reading for that big birthday.
Yeah, definitely. I gave a black work heat map to my mother for one of her birthdays. And it's actually, I used the data from the year she was born, but it's kind of the same idea. I think it was maybe last year, or the year before that I did that for her birthday.
So you stitched it for her, or did you give her the pattern and make it?
I actually did stitch that one for her. The black work one is much smaller, and it takes me about, I'm trying to remember how long it took me. I think it took me about a week because it's pretty small and it's all backstitch and some French knots.
Yay.
Oh, those dreaded French knots.
All right. Now, so let's go back now. All right. So I come to you and I say, I want a thing for best next big birthday. And so chart this out. So then you chart out, you look up the temperatures and you make a spreadsheet of that. And then do you also then assign the colors, or?
Yeah, I have that built into my script. So basically my Python script. So basically what I do, it depends whether it's historical or future data. If it's historical data, I just have my Python script look at, like, okay, what's the high temperature for the year, the low temperature of the year, and then it sort of just maps out the temperatures by color. And the way that I chose the colors was I literally took out my cross stitch box and I lined up colors side by side as close together as possible in color, in shade. And I came up with 56 colors, from bright red down to purple. And that became my core, what's the word? Rainbow.
Yeah.
And then, so
your,
if it's
your
a story,
palette, your artist's palette.
My palette. Thank you. Palette. That's the right word. So if it's historical data, I just have it map evenly through the colors up on the temperature range for the year. And then if it's future data, that's where it gets a little trickier, because like when you plan it out and when you start stitching, you don't know if the high temperature is going to be 90 or 110. And so what I have is, even if it's a heat map that people are going to be entering the temperatures on their own, I use my script to look at previous years of that weather station, of that area, and to kind of see for those previous years, what were the high temperatures and low temperatures. And then I email people to say, here's what I'm seeing. I think we should set it at this high, this low. Does that make sense to you, given your experience there? And they'll say yes or no, or they'll tweak it. But as long as we tweak it before they start stitching, then I can map the colors and then we're off to the races. And then if it does happen to like be record high temperatures like this year, then I usually set some like leeway above the top so that like if the temperature goes above what we predicted, it would just be the same color as the high temperature.
This is so much fun because, I mean, I'm just thinking all kinds of historic events you could do.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out like something that might work as like a something digital that's not necessarily custom. And, you know, maybe there's like a century's worth of data that I could put into it.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, that's sort of my current what's currently marinating in my brain.
What fun. And then the other part that you do is you have so many variations for how to stitch these things. I mean, your supernova one is the one that's really intriguing me these days, you know, of all of them, but you have so many variations. It isn't just a series of blocks.
Right. Yeah. I started off with the rectangle, and the rectangle I want to say is 18 inches wide. Maybe it's 12 inches wide. I'm not remembering. I usually stitch on 18 count Ada. I actually don't remember the dimensions of it. And then the flower basically has, each month is a flower. And that one is like 3 months, 3 months, 3 months in rows. So it's three flowers across by four flowers down.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sound wave was actually the second one that I came up with, because I was looking for something new and different. And I just started kind of playing around with Excel. And this is before I started using Python. So I was literally like mapping things out in Excel just to like see what I could come up with. And the Soundwave one, just like, I don't know, it spoke to me somehow. Like I looked at it and I was like, yeah, that's cool. I like how that looks.
So do you use DMC then for your color?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just thinking, I know we've talked to people I've heard people say that like if you Cosmos adds, like if you want more blues or something, they have a wider range of blacks and something. And that would be an interesting, if you could figure out how to add, you know, mm-hmm. if people wanted more colors, you know, I know Cosmos is harder to get than DMC. It's not sold at the big box stores. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think I just like the first couple kits I did called for DMC, and I just kind of imprinted on that, and I imprinted on the 18 count Ada, and mm-hmm. I just never looked back. Though when I do stitch the Supernova, I may actually do that on a smaller count. I haven't quite decided yet.
Yeah.
But I do, in the patterns, I do give the like dimensions for 14 count, 18 count, and 28 count, because I know that different people like stitching on different things. You know, for me, my comfort zone is 18, but for you, it might be 28.
Right.
Now,
do you generate a chart, or do you say,
I do.
This is how to, oh, you do. Okay. All right.
Yeah. I do the whole 10 by 10 gridding. And that's part of the automated, I've been through several evolutions with this. So when I first started it, when I was doing my own, it was all in Excel. And I literally had like a computer next to me when I was stitching, and I would just look at it like on Excel on my computer. And then I moved to having just the data pull, of the weather data using Python, actually R, using R at the time. And sending that over to Google Sheets and then creating it there. But it was still pretty, like, it took quite a bit of time, probably like an hour or two every time to do each pattern. And so I recently, in the past year, have fully automated it. So it will, like, I can tell it, give all the customization inputs. And if everything works as expected, which is not always the case, it will create the PDF right out of my code. And that has all of the, like, the grids, the pattern, I have a page which is, I believe, works with Pattern Keeper. I use iPhone products, so there doesn't seem to be a Pattern Keeper thing for iPhone products. So I haven't been able to test that, but customers have told me that it works.
Wow. So,
yeah.
So this is really, from your end, quite automated once you get the data in place.
Yeah, that's been both at work and with these heat maps. Like that's the thing I'm always continually working and improving on, is automating it and trying to not repeat things over and over again. So right. Like sometimes there's special cases where like I have to set things up a little bit differently. That's always going to be true. But the same steps over and over again, I try to automate.
Yeah. What kind of data, historical data, is available? I mean, can we go way back in time, and do they have estimations of temperature ranges, or are you pretty limited there?
This is one of the tricky parts of relying on the data set that's available, which is a government data set. It's through the National Oceanic and Atmospheric.
Right.
NOAA. Whatever the last A stands for.
Yeah.
NOAA. Yeah.
Probably administration, I guess. Yeah.
Yes, I think you're right. I think it's administration. I should know that off the top of my head.
You say government administration. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Yep. There we go. And it really varies from station to station and from and by date ranges. So one of the things that I do when I am looking for which station to pull, I have it like I input a zip code and then I have my code look for, okay, what are all the stations that are within like 30 miles of that zip code? And then not only that, but like which ones are currently producing data or were currently producing data for that time period. Because some of them only have like 10 years of data and some of them have 100, 150 years of data. Oh. And so it really depends on the stations. Like Logan Airport has data going all the way back to the early 1900s. But there are some stations that just came online this century. And so some of them are really spotty. So one of the things I found really interesting as I was working on this supernova, which is a brand new pattern I haven't even had a chance to stitch yet, is I was looking at a whole bunch of different places, particularly places that have relevance for me so that when I stitch my own, like, you know, it resonates. I was looking at a whole bunch of different locations. And the thing that was really interesting that I hadn't planned on in advance is that there's always going to be missing data from some of the weather stations. But with the supernova, that actually creates an artistic effect. So for listeners who want to see what I mean while I'm talking about it, on my Instagram page, there's a picture with a whole bunch of different supernova patterns. And some of them, particularly San Diego in that example, have kind of this like crackle through them. It almost looks like a tree stump that cracked. And you can just see like the black through it. And that's missing data.
Oh, okay.
And so it actually makes it makes a dimension of this pattern that wasn't there for the other patterns that have, like, I've sort of jumped through hoops to make sure there's like complete data for those other ones. Whereas this one, it's even more interesting when there's some of those crackles, or like Tahiti is where I took my honeymoon. And so I looked at the year I took my honeymoon and there's only 60% of the data. So it looks very different from the rest of them.
There's so many options here, because I'm thinking you could put together a piece, because now we get creative. So, you know, send me the data for both poles and three or four places at the equator for a year, and
right.
You know, and combine that, like do your supernovas on a big piece of cloth. And combine those. Oh, you could have so much fun with all the colors and the variations.
I was actually thinking about that. I was trying to think of like almost like a four square, like a window pane with different supernovas in it that were pulled in different ways. And I ultimately decided not to go down that road, but I was kind of thinking along the same lines as well. And along the same lines of like different locations, I've actually had a couple of customers who have requested to incorporate their vacations.
Sure.
In there. So like they might have, COVID got in the way of a few of them, but her plan was, I think, she was from Washington and she was going to visit Florida, Thailand, maybe Hawaii. I don't remember all the different locations. But so we looked at all the different locations and came up with a palette prediction to encompass all of those. So you could kind of see, and then so it would look like there'd be bright red in the middle of blue if she took a vacation somewhere warm in the middle of winter.
Yeah. Yeah. And now I'm thinking, you know, take like Beth, you've got family all over the place.
Right.
Do a piece with a year of temperatures for where each of your family members live. Yeah.
Right. And I just keep on thinking, you know, if I did a temperature of where I was born, which is Albuquerque, versus my this next year, which is a year of my significance, doing one and do a comparison, because I'm in the Midwest now. And so how much the temperature, how different that would look, you know, something where I could combine the, even though just those two dates would be interesting.
Yeah, there's so, because you're doing, I mean, you create these abstract things, these, you know, abstract art things. Oh, yes. Okay. This is cool. Fun stuff.
It fits my, the science side, you know, and even when I hear you talk about using Python, and I'm not a computer person, but I have a son that is, and I'm like, okay, you're sounding like him. I understand what you're speaking of, maybe. So it just, but it hits that science side in my family, and I know my guys would think that would be so cool if I did something, you know, of the year of their birth or where they're living now, a temperature. I just think that they would think that is so cool. But
yeah, it definitely I feel like it's different enough from a lot of other patterns that I don't know, I can't even really figure out what I'm trying to say here, but I don't know, it's kind of a separate niche,
right? Oh, very much, yeah. So all right, so black work, when you do them with black work, what does that look like? How do you go about that?
So what I did, because I've never really done too much black work, to be honest, and I just kind of did some research on, like, okay, what are the types of patterns? And I picked 12 different black work designs that I liked and that would stitch well with two colors. And then I put them in a grid. So it's 3x4, kind of like the flower setup. And I have a couple different ways. So I have one that's just like two colors and it's just straight up. It's not heat mapped. But the one that I did for my mother's birth year, what I did was I pulled the high and low temperature for the month. And then the high temperature is one of the colors. The low temperature is the other color. And it depends on which of the black work patterns gets which color combination, because some of them look better with like the brighter color as the particular black work element. And so it's more just like a, you know, use these two colors and kind of decide which one you want to be which, part of the pattern.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cause you can, oh, cause now Beth here, I'm thinking if you did needle painting.
Right.
With this.
Right. Instead of just doing X's, right. Taking it and using, making more of a long, short or stitch. Somehow. Right. Yeah, that would be cool.
Oh, yeah, like an embroidery.
Right.
Yeah.
I've seen so much embroidery and like various stitches that are so beautiful. I just always keep coming back to cross stitch.
There is something relaxing about cross stitch. I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've said this before, when I'm stressed, that's what I do. I pull it out because you just make little. That's all I have to do is make a little X, follow the pattern, make an X. And there's something right. Relaxing about it.
Exactly. Exactly. Like that. That's one of the reasons I think I settled on this is that when I'm actually stitching, I don't have to think about it. I think about it in advance when I'm designing the patterns and building the patterns. But then when I actually sit down to stitch, I don't have to make any decisions. I can just follow the pattern.
Right. Right. And I think that's what I like about your heat maps is that you've really done most of the work, you know, the person just needs to come in and stitch. And sometimes that's just what you want to do. You don't want to think about it. You just want to stitch.
So I want to do a heat map of the year I turned 21. So that's 2020. So, hey, it could be. I could dream.
Oh, sorry.
I could dream.
Yeah.
So what do I have to, what do I need to say to you to get to generate that? Is it just give me the heat map for 2020? I have to provide some parameters for you. What is that?
Right. So I need the year if it's a full year. If it's like an off year, like September 1st through August 31st, then I need the specific dates. But if it's just like 2020, I just need to know the year and the zip code or postal code if it's somewhere else, and an email address, because Etsy doesn't let me send an attachment through Etsy. So I have to email it from my Tangleware Gmail account. You also have to, like, at checkout, you have to select like which option you want. So like if you wanted to do a 2023 heat map, you'd have to select like, do you want to enter the data or do you want the pattern quarterly?
So if you're doing something,
but if it's in the past, then I'll just send a PDF.
Slick.
When I first started doing the like current year heat maps, I was offering I thought I could automate the data pull to send the data over to Google Sheets on like a daily basis. And I had five or so people who were doing that. And it pretty soon became obvious that like daily update wasn't going to work very well, partly because of like the vagaries of the NOAA site, but also just with like, I was using R at the time with the R scripts and so on. It just, I ended up doing a lot of manual pulls. And so I shifted over to this, and this works much more better and much more better. Yeah. this works much better and is much more stable.
Okay. This is fun. So then everything comes out of your Etsy shop then. So that's where people go, is to your Etsy shop.
Yes.
To order. And then if they leave an email.
I had a website for a little while, but I feel like Etsy is kind of where people often go for cross stitch patterns that aren't from like the companies or whatever. It seemed like I wasn't getting as much traffic out of the website to be worth maintaining it.
So how did you come up with your name Tangleware?
That's actually an interesting question. Back when I was engaged, I was trying to come up with some jewelry that I was going to wear at my wedding and give to my mother and my bridesmaids to wear at the wedding. And I went through a whole process of trying to figure out what I was going to do, and eventually settled on it's like a ribbon woven thing. And so originally I had a bunch of those, and I did some craft shows and things like that, like small local ones. And I set up my shop originally with those necklaces, but then I realized I didn't really enjoy like making those as much as I enjoy cross stitching and data stuff. So I ended up repurposing my shop for the heat map.
Okay.
But it's still, I mean, like cross stitching is kind of a tangle. You don't wear it, but it's kind of a tangle. So I figured it was close enough.
Hey, it's a cool
sure.
name. Stick with it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So do we have new ideas in the future, or is this keeping you busy enough that it's worth exploring for a while?
Both.
Okay.
So yeah, I do have some ideas for the future. I always seem to come up with like a new idea before I've even started stitching the last idea. So I think what my next plan of action is to actually just stitch the Supernova. I haven't quite settled on which location and so on to stitch yet. But once I do that, that's sort of next on my plate. And I don't think that will take quite as long as some of the other heat maps, just because of the way it's set up, but I could be wrong. And then, but I am sort of working on another idea. I saw somebody posted in a Facebook group, I am in a cross-stitch group, something that was cross-stitched that was squares of varying sizes, and it looked kind of like stained glass. And it kind of set my mind going of like, I wonder if I could create something that looks kind of like stained glass, that's a heat map that has, I haven't totally figured it out yet, but that's sort of where my brain is going with it. And I'm wondering, oh, maybe there's one that I can create that's like a standalone product that's not custom, but is something that everyone would be interested in. Not everyone, but like, I think it would be cool to have like 1776, but I don't think we have data going back that far.
Yeah.
Right.
Another thing I was looking at was like maybe the 1900s or I don't know. So I'm still trying to work through that idea. It took me probably 6 months to a year to really work out how I wanted to build the Supernova. And when I started the Supernova, the idea was to kind of have lines radiate with backstitch lines that would extend to full stitches. And that was just, it turned out to be too problematic to implement using Python.
Yeah.
So I ended up going with full stitches, which I'll probably enjoy stitching more anyway.
But right. But really, this whole thing, we've talked about heat maps, but it's really any data that you can pull.
It is.
So it could be sales data. It could be,
it could be any data. I actually back in 2020, I think it was, I started looking at political data about like number of people voting and for whom and so on, just to see if there was anything I could come up with. And I ended up kind of scrapping that a little bit. But yeah, it could be any data.
And what about like the Arctic? One of the, they have to have tons of data they've pulled from like the ice cores they've done. I think that might be interesting to do as the heat map.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah.
Or something to do with the depth of the ocean.
Or the altitude of a mountain. Or
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Because that to me would be interesting. It would look different. You know, it would just be different data that you're pulling in and doing, you know, and it, depending on where you are, what you're interested in.
Yeah.
Just the data that, you know, I don't know. Curiosity.
I now through my mind, I have, I'm picturing my sound wave heat map, but with elevation data instead of temperature data.
Yes. Yes.
Huh. That's a really interesting idea.
Okay, here now. See, this is why this has become just in this conversation so much more. Because now, take for instance, you know, your favorite song.
Yeah, I thought about that. I thought about that with a volume or something. Yeah, and actually, somebody was asking about that on my I have a YouTube channel that has like a video of like how how I create the patterns. And somebody was asking about that for the sound wave. I didn't know if it would get into any kind of copyright issue. I never really investigated it because music is,
highly copyrighted. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, just decibel readings.
Mm-hmm.
So like an orchestra, just decibel readings, an orchestra playing, you know, Beethoven's Fifth or something, whatever. You could pull, that would be really interesting to see how that comes out.
And I wonder if the different instruments might have different colors too.
Right. Exactly.
Huh.
Oh, think about that.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that. That sounds intriguing.
Yeah, the, you know, the violin section, the cellos. Yeah.
Right.
And you could get that.
You guys have given me a lot of good ideas.
Yeah, because you could pull that data. That's not tough.
I'd have to look and see where that is, because it would be different data set than what I currently have. But I'm sure it's out there somewhere.
Oh, sure. Because I know that, I watched some analysts, music analysts, and they seem to be able to get recordings for, you know, vocal track only, you know, say a four-piece band, you know, guitar, bass guitar, drums, and they get individual tracks isolated. And you could, so then you could pull the data. Oh, man. Okay. All right. Start writing down ideas. This is what we got to do. Write them down.
Yeah. Well, and here's another one. And I'm, you know, Gary is into the Tour de France and bicycling. Is there's got to be data about that stuff.
And oh,
I
there
don't
must.
Know what you, I don't know what I you mean, do with that.
There's probably even like Python accessible data for that.
Yeah.
I would imagine. Because that seems like something that a lot of people would have be interested in analyzing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That, you know, Tour de France alone, the data that's generated from one bicycle, I mean, you can get cadence, power, speed, elevation, gear ratios. Yeah. The whole thing you could put together a whole, like a mountain climb race from your favorite racer. You could stitch a whole thing about just the data they generate, and that's all available. Okay. All right. You've done it, Raina. You've gotten the wheel spinning. Bravo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now I have so many wheels spinning and not enough time to do all these things.
That's how it is.
Yep.
Sleep is optional.
I like sleep too much for it to be optional.
All right, Raina, this has been a blast. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thanks so much for connecting and for having me on your show.
Yep. Really enjoyed it. Yeah. Thanks to everyone for listening.
Thanks.